Welcome to Depth of Field with Tim Bradstreet and Tom Racine.
Well, hello and welcome back to Depth of Field. Apparently, Season 2 begins here. This is the summer movie recap, the Comic-Con recap, and just catching up with Tim Bradstreet. It's been a while since we've had a chance to sit down and chat. Life gets in the way. My wife had a baby 4 days ago. I have a child that's 4 days old. It's amazing. So that's just an excuse, because really, we're just lazy. We just didn't want to get around to it. But still, we're here, Season 2, and I'm back with Tim Bradstreet. Hello, Tim Bradstreet.
Hello, Tom Racine.
How you doing, amigo?
I am fit and trim, lad.
Yes,
fit
you
and
are.
Trim, yes.
Down some 30 pounds, which in England is like, what, 7 stone or something like that?
I
don't
know how it works. I think it's like 3 stone.
3 stone.
I don't know.
I'm not sure. I'm going to have to look that up, what a stone is. I'm not even sure.
We need a proper measurement of that. You know, it's like I've read the Patrick O'Brien, you know, Master and Commander novels like once all the way through, and I've started them again. I'm on book 5, and I still don't know what a stone is.
Somebody call Dave Alcock. We'll figure it out. Maybe he knows.
Come on. Even in Britain, they don't still, you know, I don't think they, well, but they might be more inclined to know.
At least they might know what their grandfather called it or something, you know. So my grandfather was 7 hands high and weighed 14 stone, you know. Anyway, welcome back. We'll do a very quick Comic-Con recap, because now it's ancient news, because it was, gosh, an entire month ago. But I was there for 4 days as a member of the press. If you go over to comicscoasttocoast.com, you can hear my recap with the wonderful Justin Thompson. He and I talk a little bit about stuff, and I interviewed some cool people.
Make sure we link to that on the site.
I should.
Get off your duff.
I'm not the web guy. I just talk.
Post some links, you know, for God's sake.
And I'm actually still waiting to edit some more down. I talked to Rod Roddenberry of Gene Roddenberry's son.
Is that Patrick Kilpatrick's best friend?
I was really concerned that his name was actually, they named him Rod, but it's not. I think that's his nickname is Rod.
That's cool.
I was like, man, if your last name is Roddenberry and you name you Rodney, I think you should be shot.
But I think Patrick Kilpatrick's first name is actually Horace.
Well, that works out. Nice. I'd rather go by Patrick.
Yes.
But I have some other interviews waiting to happen. Some guys from who do art for Star Wars. That's going to be over at the Tall Tales Features site. See,
who are you going to have on there? You got Kat Staggs? You talk to her?
No, I talked to Chris Rafe and Chris Trevis.
They
do a lot of the gaming stuff, and they just did a book on Star Wars Blueprints. Very cool stuff. Very nice guys. They do some fun stuff. So I'll be interviewing or talking about them over at talltalefeatures.com, my other podcast. But this is the most important podcast of all.
Dr. Plug.
Exactly. Hey, what am I saying? What am I doing? So how did Comic-Con go for you?
Oh, it was fantastic. And, you know, a lot of our forum members already, you know, have the report on that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was a really wonderful year for Comic-Con for me, partially because I wasn't in Artist Alley and didn't have to make that trek through the entire freaking show to get from point A to point B. It took a lot of stress off me. I pretty much parked myself at the Raw booth all weekend, and we were just right around the corner from the door.
So you could sneak out, grab a bite to eat. You know.
Yeah, do whatever I had to do. And, you know, I had a little bit of room at the table. I didn't have the kind of room I'd have in Artist Alley, but... Mm-hmm. Actually, not much worse, because they had reduced the size of the tables to 4 feet unless you wanted to pay $700.
Wow. Jeez.
So, yes, the wonderful treatment the artists get at Comic-Con.
I say 4 feet, half your artwork is bigger than 4 feet.
I guess we're getting paid back for all the years they didn't charge us and let us do whatever we wanted.
That's right. It's karma, baby. Karma.
And now it's turning into a... Well, it's eventually going to go across the street, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to see the artist at Comic-Con? You have to go to the hotel across the street.
I was going to talk about that, actually. That was one of the things just to bring up, because I've been reading a lot of the comic book sellers. A lot of those guys are sounding kind of bitter these days that, you know, it's not about the comic books anymore. It's about Hollywood. And I'm thinking, part of me is like, well, I agree with that. I understand that. But part of me is like, you got 120,000 people wandering through, and they all head throughout the entire thing. They go to the comic book section. I mean, if your sales are going down, then that's one thing. But, you know, I think is it kind of whiny to sit there and say, oh, Hollywood's taken over, and yet you still have 120,000 people walking through your booth? What do you think?
I think it's a double-edged sword. You know, the Hollywood angle on the comic book market is a boon to the film industry.
Yeah, they're loving it, yeah.
But it's not necessarily making sales of the comics that much better, from what I can tell. Comics are still just comics. It just so happens that there is a... an industry that is plumbing the I don't have a good analogy for this, but they're
they're plumbing something.
They're plumbing something, and something they're deep. They're mining something from you know, they're looking for original ideas and fan base, and comics is tailor made for that, and right. they finally discovered it. And
original ideas like Death Race, yeah. and things like that.
But you know, and it's I think it's great to have the film companies at Comic-Con every year, and now they say it's the number one place, the number one market to promote your film in the United States.
I have no doubt of that,
and I think that's. Hilarious, but so what happened to the Comic-Con?
Yeah, you know, Comic-Con.
So I think it's a shame that Artist Alley is getting shoved back. I've been calling it Artist Armpit for the last 3 or 4 years, and that's not a really big exaggeration.
It is getting smaller. And
we
smaller,
used to
yeah.
be, and I don't think you know. I mean, we used to get treated with a lot of respect, and we had our big area, and we had all our artists, and we had our tables, and. We did our thing, and over the years, it's continued to shrink. And you know, I don't want to get on a soapbox about that. I just don't think everyone says movies are the savior of the comic industry, and I think that's actually you're missing it. Mm-hmm. I think that it helps promote the characters and so forth, but it's not really making the sales that much. And I think it remains to be seen how much impact it's going to actually have on readership of comics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are the same people that. You know, I mean, the video games and all this other escapism, let's be honest, is more attractive to the short attention span. Mm-hmm. And the short attention span is wrapped around young people and very select and interesting old people. But that's not a bad thing. It's just a fact. It's just yeah, the way it yeah. is, you know.
Yeah, the market's going to change over time no matter what you do, so you
yeah,
can't...
Yeah, and I think the comics has grown hugely mm-hmm. in the last decade. As a medium.
Mm-hmm. It certainly gets taken more seriously. I think more people learn to, especially graphic novels, things like that. They see the movies being made. You know,
sure.
Even like Ghost World, you know, movies that are not typically what you would think of comic book movies. So.
Yeah. But Comic-Con was fantastic. I didn't have to worry about any of that stuff. Mm. And I just had fun at the booth and met people, and we had a little raw party. We had, you know, fun folks stop by, like Casper Van Dien actually stopped. We ran into him in the elevator and
really cool.
we invited him to the party, and he was really cool and a very nice guy. And I have a lot of, you know, newfound respect for the gentleman. And Wayne Kramer, who's directed some really wonderful films, was there. And Tim Vigil and Bernie Wrightson and, you know, all our friends stopped by. And
cool.
It was a good time.
Yeah. And I do have, that was the other thing I'm going to put.
Screen Mutant Chronicles, too.
I was going to talk about that, because that's the other interview I did was I was going to save it for the Raw side. Maybe I'll even tack it on at the end of this one or make it a separate thing, but I talked to Thomas Shane for a little while, about, you know, 10, 15 minutes. And
you did get that interview.
I did get that interview, okay, yes. Good. He finally, well, yeah, you set me up with him, and you were over at a different booth at the time signing something, but yeah, he made it back and was, you know, we sat and talked for about 15 minutes about Mutant Chronicles and other stuff. I'd ask him a few questions
awesome.
About Dark
we
Country.
Awesome, we should post that interview for our fan base.
Something we look forward to.
Whatever you want
to
call it.
So maybe at the end of this, depending on how long we go, or it may just be its own separate thing. But
sorry, nice, knocking over drinks.
You're just we're drinking here. We're sitting at literally sitting at a bar in Tim's studio. So you know he's got an empty martini glass. So we're loaded. It's
I think
great.
We should just be like leave it. We don't need to be so specific. We're at a bar. We're running a live remote.
That's right. We're at a bar.
From a bar.
We just make little tinkly noises in the background every now and then. That'd be kind of funny.
And that's all they need to know. We don't need to be more specific.
Wasn't there a WKRP in Cincinnati where Johnny Fever they test his reaction time? He gets progressively drunk as the show goes on, but his reaction times actually improve as mm-hmm. he gets drunker. I think we should try that sometime.
It's one of the classic episodes.
We should start now. Just do a shot of tequila every 10 minutes and see how it ends up. So
I'm ready to start making the martinis, pal. Yeah.
By the end of this league, like, well, I was back in the 70s. It'll be a lot of fun. I think it'd be, you get a lot of trouble.
Old Streety Pie is going to grab the pitcher, make a pitcher of martinis. Okay. All right.
Moving on to summer movie recap. I mean, we had a nice summer movie preview, and I think we had some very
That was
valuable...
a quick Comic-Con recap.
Well, what else is there to talk about is, you know, a bunch of people go to Comic-Con. I mean, I walked around. My back is still killing me from 4 days of carrying my stupid podcast stuff. And
Well, and truthfully, people can read all the, you know, recaps and see a ton of pictures on the forum, mm-hmm. Both in Tom's... I think the main one is in Tom's. Comic-Con 08 is the thread.
Great, great, great. So. Yeah, I mean, nothing spectacular happened there. We could talk a little bit about the Mutant Chronicles screening. How'd that go?
It went really well.
All I know is I didn't go.
It's weird how people... this is topical because I've been kind of seeing this a little bit of this... I'm sorry.
It was crowded. Don't worry about it.
Oh, it was hell. Yeah.
But I blame the Ain't It Cool guys. That's their fault.
You know, a lot of people like you know, we talk big... balls about Mutant Chronicles. Mm-hmm. But what people need to understand is that this is a B movie. Mm-hmm. It's a low budget movie. It was made for less than $10 million.
And it looks better than that.
And I'll
I saw some of the previews. Just, I didn't see the screening, but I saw some of it. I was like, wow, I'm impressed.
When you see that one trailer, mm-hmm. you're seeing graded footage. You mm-hmm. know, and what we screened at Comic-Con was not completely graded.
Right.
So it's like, you know, looking at the Rambo Red Band trailer and then looking at the movie, you know, you're looking at two different things.
Right.
Well, obviously, but I mean, visually, you're looking at two different things. It's not, you know, the film's not done yet. So.
Right. Yeah, part of the purpose of this was to hopefully drum up some business and get some backing.
Yeah, I think they're trying to find a distributor. Right. And,
Thomas Jane talks a little bit about that in the interview.
They need another $1 million to kind of clean up some stuff. And you know, people are downloading this movie illegally. And, you know, certain reviews are coming out and judging the film on an unfinished product.
I love that. So that's the biggest downfall of the internet right there, I think.
You got to take the good with the bad. And. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of those bad things. But when it finally gets finished and released, people will see. You know, there's some confusion in the front of the film with some issues, and that stuff they're going to fix. They're mm-hmm. you know, they're addressing the blood flying around that's not color timed and doesn't look very realistic. Not that you know, like even Zatoichi blood or 300 blood looks that realistic, but at right. least it fits the B movie right. kind of yeah.
Right.
So no one set out to make Last Tango in Paris.
That butter scene with John Malkovich?
To
it's
make
weird,
a but. Quality B movie, a fun little actioner. So you know, when people talk about how fun it is, please take that into context.
Yeah, I'm serious. I thought the preview looked really pretty cool. I'm thinking that movie looks a lot better than $10 million. And Ron Perlman looked like he was having a blast. And you know, the whole thing looks.
Ron's fun in it.
Yeah,
and there's a gal in it. Who I never knew of her before, who's fantastic. Mm. She's like this mute monk assistant to Ron Perlman's character, and she's one. I should find her name real quick, but I'm not going to do it.
That would take forethought right there. But
wow. You know, I think it's more honest if I say I can't remember her freaking name. You know?
But she was amazing. So
she was awesome, yeah.
So anything else from Comic-Con? I mean, any projects get announced there? Anything?
Well, we kind of, I guess, made a announcement about a movie that I wrote kind of an outline, a treatment for this thing called The Devil's Commandos.
Oh, cool. With Todd Farmer, I believe?
Yeah, well, yeah. I showed it to Todd, and I showed it to Tom, and you know, Todd was very excited about it, and he's very... I love Todd because... you know, he's nice to me. You know, if
that's all it takes, right?
You know, I may not yet know how specifically to write the perfect outline because what I do is I do an outline, kind of a story outline that's kind of half, you know, it's a third prose, a third outline, and a third script and dialogue.
Some of it's in haiku. That's
and,
what I like.
But there is, you know, an order to it. And Todd read it and he loved it. Mm. And, Tom read it and he loved it. And so I talked to Tom and I said, what do you think about Todd and I doing a screenplay for this or having Todd do the screenplay? And Tom was like, yeah, I think Todd would be perfect. So I went back to Todd and I you know, brought it to him and he said he definitely would want to do it.
Cool.
So we're working on that now. And
so the Devil's Commandos, it's about Satan without his underpants? Is that what it's about?
That is true. I mean, that is true. It's a World War II film with genre elements.
Cool.
A story that takes place in the Pacific Theater of World War II on American soil, which is not unfactual. It's actually based on based on some actual events, but based on definitely certain battles that actually took place.
Excellent. I love that kind of stuff.
And it's kind of the Twilight Zone meets combat. You know, we want the combat, or you know, the Twilight Zone meets the Big Red One. You know, it's going to be well, not. That's actually not even a good. I think, you know, I think a better thing is Rod Serling meets Samuel Fuller. This is a better way to describe that, because the Big Red One is a story about guys, you know, that come to know each other in their camaraderie through the theater of war in Europe over a long period of time and many battles. This is very self-contained. And the more I start to ramble, the more I'm going to give away. I'm not going to do that.
Okay,
so,
no more talking.
Suffice it to say, you can go over to the Raw forums, check out the thread on the on that topic, the Devil's Commandos. There's a teaser poster that I created, and a little bit of yappity yap. Farmer shows up there once in a while. So there's, you know, we'll be keeping everybody posted on events at that spot.
Excellent, excellent. Well. Are we done with Comic-Con there? Because I've got nothing to add about Comic-Con.
I want to talk about In Bruges when we get to summer movies. Even though it's not a blockbuster movie, which we're going to talk about, I want to talk about In Bruges at some point.
All right, I'll write that down, In Bruges. So we had our little talk about comic movies and or summer movies, and I believe that was it you said you thought that Indiana Jones would take the box office crown?
I think that was my pick was going to be Indiana Jones.
And I believe I thought that it was going to be WALL-E. And we were both wrong. You were closer, though. You were
shocking,
closer.
Though.
Shocking that we're not
who
right.
Can ever, you know, you're Kreskin, and I'm the amazing Criswell.
And obviously, the number one movie in terms of box office was The Dark Knight, which is currently taking in $492 million. So it should top 500, which is the second best all time after Titanic. It is now past Star Wars. That's and as we talked, not in terms of actual people going to see, because those numbers are ridiculous in Star Wars, and even Gone with the Wind, I think, is still one of the, maybe number one in terms of actual per person ticket sales. I think Gone with the Wind may be number
one. This box office money thing is one of the stupidest measuring sticks I've ever
because,
heard.
Yeah, because when Star Wars came out, how much was a movie? Was it $5?
When Star Wars came out?
Yeah.
It was like $1.50.
Yeah, it was even that. Yeah, now it's,
I'm serious.
Now
it was
$10.50.
$1.50 at the Eastland Cinemas where I saw Star Wars.
That's right. Yeah, I think maybe $3 or something, if that.
So if you take, well, I don't know what the percentage of, well, I guess you just, you count, how do you, what's the gross? Like, how much of that ticket price are they applying towards the total number of total amount of money made each weekend?
I'm pretty sure that's the gross. I think the gross is just pure ticket sales.
So if I pay $9, that gets thrown towards the
right,
the total.
Yeah, because then the net is what they get afterwards, after the theaters take their money, after, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's why they've all lost money in creative accounting. Because,
okay.
They'll find a way to make The Dark Knight lose money.
So I say you take an average, you find out how many tickets were sold for Ben-Hur and Gone with the Wind and Star Wars. And then you average that by $7 a ticket. Because I think $7 is a good across-the-country average.
Yeah, I figure out what it is now, yeah.
Yeah, and then do the math and see what those movies did.
Yeah, that's why I'm pretty sure I've read the stuff before that no one's even come close to Gone with the Wind, because it was something like 25 or 30 million people saw it, because almost everybody in America saw that film when it came out in 1939.
Well, then I'd also be interested, well, and I don't know how much foreign distribution we had in 1939, but I know by 1959 or 58 or whenever Ben-Hur was out, that movie played in Europe and other places as well. Obviously, Star Wars played around the world. I'd be interested to know what that foreign box office and that total box office is.
Right, right. It is crazy.
We need someone to do some research for us, because you know what? The research on math is not a topic I embrace. I am curious to know, but I want someone else to do the legwork.
That's pretty funny.
So so Iron Man came in second.
Iron Man came in second. And that was, you know, when you look back at it now, I did think Indiana Jones might do better. And actually, it's only $2 million behind Iron Man.
Yeah, roughly $2 million.
Pocket change
at
that level.
I almost have to call that a tie.
Yeah, that's close enough to a 317 to 315. Now we have a big surprise at number
four. $2 million against a couple of movies that made over 300 mil.
Yeah, I mean, Steven Spielberg has $2 million in his pocket right now.
Trapping the bucket. Yeah, well, Steven Spielberg walks out to the mailbox and pulls out a check for that much money about every other day.
Number four is kind of the surprise for me. It's Hancock. Made 226. Yeah.
And
that's just a testament to the power of Will Smith. I mean, I, you know, obviously he's the guy who owns July 4th and everything. But it was I Am Legend came out, and it's basically just him. in a zombie movie, and it made $75 million in its first weekend.
We were talking about that on the forums.
Yeah, so that's just him. That's just all Will Smith. Even a zombie film, people are going to go see him do anything. So yeah. It didn't surprise me that it opened up huge. It actually opened up at $62 million. Well, you know what I mean. It's basically him and a dog for the vast majority of the film, and it still made $75 million in its opening weekend.
Also a genre movie. I mean, in addition to being a zombie film, I mean, more generally, it's a genre film. But, you know, we were talking about that on the on a thread the other day I was talking about Punisher Warzone and its release date of December 5th. Mm-hmm. And I think that is to be saved for after the summer blockbuster conversation. We'll talk about that later. But
we can come back to that.
But yeah, no, I hear what you're saying, but you know, it's like Hancock for me. Well, it's like I told you, I had heard from several people that it bombed. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you were sitting here right, you know, looking at me when I called up this 2008 box office spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And when I saw Hancock at number 4, my eyes about popped out of my head. So I'm like, did that movie really make that much money?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And that's just a testament to Will Smith, really, the power of his box office. I mean, he's got to be the number one in terms of, like, if you make a movie, he's got to bring you the most money back. I'm sure he's got to be
the number one. How'd that happen? I love Will Smith, but how in the fuck did that happen?
I don't know.
Can I say the F word?
Well, I can bleep it later. It'll be a rooster crowing or something.
I'll leave it. iTunes never catches it.
I mean, Will Smith is just, you know, I think he's incredibly likable. I think the movies like Men in Black, which I thought was a pretty good film, but now is on TBS all the time, and I just sit and watch it. I mean, I just kind of like, hey, I like him. He's funny, and I just think he's got this incredibly broad appeal, and it just shows in a movie like that where it's kind of this R-rated genre film, the audience still follows him, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's like I said, I have no problem with Will Smith. I like Will Smith. I hate that it takes Will Smith to get a certain kind of movie greenlit.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's just a commentary on the state of exactly. But I'm still shocked that, I mean, I haven't seen Hancock, so it's unfair of me to say I'm shocked because I didn't expect it to be that good of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really expect it to be that good of a movie. But we'll see. WALL-E at 5th, and that was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to say, I wasn't really on the bandwagon. You know, when we first talked about summer blockbuster movies, there was
ambivalent on the whole.
There were a couple
thing,
of movies here that I was like, and that I finally learned to embrace.
I'm a Pixar disciple. You know, at this point, they've proven track record after track record. I think the weakest movie they have is Cars, and it was still pretty good. You know, I mean, I think Pixar is basically a home run every time they come up. They can do whatever they want now. And what I like about, if I can go off on a quick tangent, what I like about WALL-E...
Aren't they getting into porn? Because there's a lot of that money there.
Yeah. The high-definition Blu-ray Pixar porn. That'd be, wow. Sign me up. But with WALL-E, it was totally a movie that probably wouldn't have gotten made 10 years ago because it was... You know, there's not a lot of dialogue in the first 40 minutes of the thing. It's not a typical kind of movie, but Pixar is stretching their boundaries. They keep going to the next thing.
Exactly.
And I'm really proud of them for that, you know, to say that, well, we don't know if this is going to work, but we believe in this project, and they took it. And
well, that's the difference between, you know, like, well, the reason a movie like that can get made is when someone has control and someone has the money to do what they want to do, and they follow through on that vision. And it couldn't get made at other studios.
Right, because everybody else is doing Ice Age 2, Ice Age 3, Shrek 2,
Madagascar,
Shrek 3, Madagascar 2.
It's like,
you know, come up with something new, do something different. You know?
And what I think is special about WALL-E is that it is 10 times the movie that a lot of those films are.
Right.
Because they're just sheer entertainment for sheer entertainment's sake. And that's not to sell all of them short, but WALL-E is definitely ahead above, you know, the class.
Yeah,
know?
it's like Best Picture nominee type of movie. I mean,
I thought it was the best film I saw this year.
No. The one that surprised me here, looking at this thing too. Well, first of all, Dr. Seuss's Horton Hears a Who comes in 7th.
And what happened to Kung Fu Panda?
Kung Fu Panda just up there, at number 6, just by quote, which I enjoyed.
My daughter flipped out over Kung Fu.
Yeah, my daughter too. She loved it.
I wanted to see it. I didn't want to get up early.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. It's not Pixar level, but it was better than most of the other ones. It actually had some pretty decent characterization stuff. Jack Black is really well cast.
Pretty entertaining. Yeah,
it was very entertaining.
And the animation was pretty cool looking.
Yeah, it was. It was very cool. Actually, I went off on a not to plug again, but one of the interviews I did with in Comic Con was with Andrea Romano, who's the casting director for things like Batman the Animated Series and Superman and Justice League and all this kind of stuff. And we talked about the celebrity stunt casting that shows up in a lot of these movies that we hate. And she went off on it. And I was like, Kung Fu Panda is great because Jack Black is perfect. and Dustin Hoffman is perfect in their roles. But, you know, why is Angelina Jolie in this relatively minor character? She has a few lines. She really doesn't do very much. Jackie Chan, literally three lines, maybe two laughs.
Well, I think I saw all his lines on a little behind-the-scenes thing. Yeah.
Yep. David Cross is in this film. Again, he has like one scene. And I'm like, you know, do you really need to pay these people? Do you need Angelina Jolie? But yes, you do. You need to, you know, Pixar would never do that.
Well,
if
you can say Angelina Jolie is in the movie.
That's what it's all about, right. Yeah. But then Pixar would never do that. You know, my point was like Pixar chose for The Incredibles, which is probably my favorite Pixar film, you know, the Holly Hunter, who's perfect in the role. She's a pretty big star. And Craig T. Nelson. I mean, who would have thought of Craig T. Nelson? He's not going to drive a box office, but he's perfect for the role.
Craig is awesome.
He is awesome.
I've always loved Craig T. Nelson since the Poltergeist days.
Exactly.
Hell, even since he was in The Formula with George C. Scott.
That's right.
Marlon Brando.
But my point being, he's not going to drive a box office. You're not going to say, starring Craig T. Nelson.
The days of Coach are long behind.
So it's just, you know, it's a whole voiceover thing that I get into.
Well,
so.
They're smart with that, too. And I love how John Ratzenberger always shows up.
Yeah. No matter what, that's great.
They're very clever about how they cast that voices in their films. And take Monsters, Inc., for example. Mm-hmm. The character of, I'm going to forget his name, but the big crab guy, the bad guy, voiced by James Coburn.
Right, yeah.
James Coburn could not have been more perfectly cast as that character. It's just perfect, absolutely perfect. And I know there's a certain amount. I mean, is there a certain amount of animation in the Pixar where they take the actor that they have, some of their characteristics, and add them to the concepts and designs?
Yeah, they always do a little bit of that.
So I guess it's easy to say he was perfect for it, but at the same time, he was just his presence, was wonderful.
Yeah, they are masters of casting voices.
Steve Buscemi is the slimy, salamander guy. I mean, come on, that's perfect,
right?
You know, and so there's perfect and there's clever, and I think Craig T. is definitely clever. And smart. And,
so
so stuff.
If I say what do these movies have in common? Dr. Seuss's Horton Hears a Who, Sex and the City, and The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian, what do they all have in common?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you.
Oh, I thought you were asking the audience.
I'll ask everybody, because what they have in common is they were all made more money than The Incredible Hulk, which was actually a pretty good film. And I would have never thought that Sex and the City and Horton Hears a Who would have made more money than The Hulk, to be honest with you.
They also have the same thing in common with Hellboy 2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Incredible Hulk has something in common with everything else below the Mason-Dixon line. But Sex and the City, there's no accounting for good taste. No, I'm kidding.
I was surprised by 152 million surprised me. I thought it was going to do okay.
Yeah, but there's a big audience for that, but that 152 shocked me too.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be 75, 80 or something like that, but wow, I mean, that's huge. It's the eighth largest film this year, and that's really big. And it beat out Chronicles of Narnia. They have to be pretty disappointed in that 141 million. I mean, that movie had to cost 150 to make. And if they only pulled in 140, they're not happy with that.
Yeah, hard to say, but it'll do well on DVD. They'll make their money.
Yeah, but I'm sure that they were all hoping it was going to be Harry Potter and all this kind of stuff. And Chronicles of Narnia hasn't really taken off in the same way, I don't think.
No, it hasn't. And I think, I don't really have a lot to say about that. I enjoyed the first picture.
Yeah.
I thought, nah, I don't want to go into it.
Well, my prediction is they're not going to make it through all whatever seven books. I think that they may do another one, and it's probably going to do about the same, and I think that the company's going to say, okay, that's enough.
I actually like The Golden Compass.
That one's probably not going to be made either. I keep hearing that The Subtle Knife, which is the second book in the trilogy, is on hold because they're like, ooh, we didn't really make a lot of money, so
yeah.
I'm thinking that might not get made.
Yeah, I don't know if they just mispromoted it. I enjoyed it, you know. Well, I wasn't expecting anything from it either because, you know,
it was the Catholic Church, they got all mad.
Well, I had friends who saw it, and I think Jim Daly saw it, and he was like, yeah, man, it was pretty cool. And I was like, oh, well. So finally I rented it, and, you know, when you rent something, you're not holding it under the giant microscope quite as badly, and I was able to enjoy it.
Cool. Oh, and really, as I look down the list, the one that's got to be the biggest disappointment, at least from looking at the money reason, is Speed Racer. Which is number 40, and it took in $43 million, which I think was the catering budget for that film.
Well, I wonder how much 10,000 BC cost to make.
$79, I think. at least to write it. Ugh,
yeah. I mean, they made 94 mil, but
yeah.
I mean, I'd be interested to know what the floppy turn. I can't believe the thing that's the most shocking to me on this list, which I brought up earlier, was The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, making $93 million.
Yeah, that says a lot about the, I think Brendan Fraser is very popular, and I think people like the Jet Li concept, even though.
That was the Jet Li one.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That was the Brendan Fraser one.
Yes, Brendan Fraser.
Brendan Fraser's up there twice, right?
Journey to the Center of the Earth made $92 million.
Yeah, so it's,
number 18. That's pretty surprising to me. I didn't even notice that. And there was a lot of those were 3D in the IMAX. So.
Well, hell, he was 17 and 18.
Yeah, good for you.
So Brendan Fraser's still got the appeal, somehow.
So of the top 10, Dark Knight, Indiana Jones, I'm sorry, Dark Knight, Iron Man, Indiana Jones, Hancock, Wall-E, Kung Fu Panda, Dr. Seuss's Horton Hears a Who, Sex and the City, Chronicles of Narnia, and The Incredible Hulk. What was your favorite of those?
What was my favorite?
Yeah, what did you like the most, purely entertainment-wise?
I have to say Wall-E. Mm. I think it was the most complete movie, the most solid film. Dark Knight was an awesome film going experience, but it had a lot of little problems in the second and third act for me.
Yeah.
Where
started dragging a little for me.
Well, it would just be long. I thought it would have made two movies very well. I think they could have made two movies out of it. But whatever. I felt like I was missing something that was certain things were missing, little setups, mm-hmm. Like the whole okay, now we're on a boat and there's a bomb in it. Okay, how do we get here? So those things bother me. They don't affect me, hugely. But man, from the angle of an almost perfect film, Wall-E is as close as it gets right this year. And The Dark Knight was incredible. I'd have to say that'd be number two. Iron Man would be in the top 10 maybe. But in Indiana Jones.
You're just not going to give Iron Man any love, are you?
No. Top 10's pretty good.
Top 10, yeah. But yeah. It's already in the top 10.
I saw 20 films this year, so it'd be in my upper half.
Oh, okay. Better than Sex and the City? Wow, I'm impressed.
You're funny. Indiana Jones was great to finally get to see a sequel. Ultimately, a little disappointing because of the...
More than a little.
I really thought Spielberg would try to go back to basics and try to bring Raiders back, and instead it was I got to say Lucas is probably most to blame here.
Oh yeah.
And if you get online and you find one of those Darabont screenplays, rejected screenplays, you will see what kind of a movie it really could have been.
Well, knowing what you know, how much from the Darabont stuff was in the film? What kind of percentage?
There was a certain, I'd say a lot of stuff. I don't know of it. I'd hesitate to make an exact percentage, but there was a lot of stuff, but not in the same way. Mm-hmm. We'll put it that way.
I'm hoping he wrote, the one scene that actually felt to me that had the best kind of give and take back and forth was when they're in the quicksand. And
I actually like that scene.
Yeah, I love that scene. I thought that was
because
yeah, and they're having a great back and forth, and it becomes this like 1940s His Girl Friday back and forth sort of. I love that kind of interaction. There was character development, there was script development, and then he throws him the snake, and it's hilarious. It was really funny to me. I was actually laughing out loud and saying, "That's really funny." I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got a smile on my face during the scene where they're getting chased through campus, at the beginning of the film, and thought, I feel a little of the old magic after the kind of disbelief that I had to suspend
the fridge,
which was fun to watch, but it was come on, man, it was outlandish.
I would have been fine with the fridge thing. He gets in there and they show the lead, and I'm thinking, oh, that's kind of humorous. But then it flies through the air for 75 miles, lands, and he crawls out, and he goes, oh, well, that was fun.
It was as stupid as the life raft falling from the plane.
Exactly. Why didn't they just put him on? That was a great time to put him on the rocket sled to get away from the thing. If the bomb's going to go off, get on the rocket sled, sends him out. That's much better, much more realistic.
Yeah, there's whatever. We could argue. We could talk about that.
I'm a huge Indiana Jones fan, and I was pretty disappointed in that film. I was like, I walked out going, meh.
I was with my brother. I was at not a state-of-the-art theater down in Florida on vacation when I saw it, and it really kind of like just walking in, the smell, the crappy theater, the the sound that wasn't great, all that
kind of adds up.
It brought us back to when we first saw Raiders together, and I had kind of a helping hand into the film. It's weird because I watched I finally watched Last Crusade again for the first time in a long time. And I remember when I first saw Last Crusade, I of course enjoyed it, but I thought, you know, this is much more over the top than Raiders is. Mm-hmm. And you remember when Raiders came out? I mean, mm-hmm. You think it was over the top, but it was all somehow in that pulp serial cliffhanger mode. Rooted into the history, it had style and panache. Mm-hmm. Last Crusade had more money, and it looks like they just had more money and were able to, you know, do crazier things. But after seeing, I guess my point is that I always thought that was kind of a fun movie, but you know, kind of a popcorn movie at the same time. After seeing Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I watched, like I said, watched that again, and it was a lot better to me.
Yeah, I think so.
So that's my statement on Indiana Jones. But I enjoyed it for what it was, I guess we'll never get another Raiders. You know?
Yeah, well, you never know. I keep hearing things that Lucas keeps threatening to do it, but you know,
it's like your favorite bands. You're like, man, I used to like I'm a fan of like classic Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of stupid to expect they'll ever do something exactly the same again.
Exactly.
But you know, that we keep wishing, right?
Yeah, I'd have to say that Indiana Jones was my biggest disappointment of the summer, even though it was still okay. I mean, I walked out not hating the film, but I think I probably went in with too many expectations.
Exactly. I think,
and I try not to. I mean, I really think I'm pretty good at that, but I think that right after they lost me right from the refrigerator, and I'm like, oh man, damn it, you know, don't do that. All right, don't start off the movie with me going ugh, you know. So if it ends up with an ugh, I'm okay, but if it starts off with an ugh, we're not in good place. So, and you know, I have to be 100% honest, I did not actually see The Incredible Hulk, so I will rely on you for this. Was it anything up to expectations?
You know, I just have to mention this, as I just noticed that out of the top five films, I've seen four of them at the box office. Mm-hmm. That's pretty telling, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're part of that that total gross there.
I am part of that, well that total gross. And well, I think done. A lot of people who are listening are
probably totally grossed.
Yeah, I think anybody that's listening, maybe the movie that they hadn't seen out of the top five would be WALL-E. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I almost avoided it. I almost didn't see it just because I was like, I don't need to see
this. Yeah, you were not giving it any love on the last one. I remember that.
No,
yeah.
But I went because my wife, you know, one morning, I read some good reviews. Yeah. And then, like, the next morning, my wife goes, hey, let's take Lydia to see WALL-E. And I was like, cool, let's go. And I'm so glad I did. Yeah. You know,
a surprise for you. I like that. So it brings up the question. And unless you have more, do you have more box office commentary or?
Well, I think that we could probably talk about the Hulk some more. I'm glad it did well. I'm really glad it did well. Mm-hmm. Because I loved the concept when I first heard of the reboot. I did like Eric Bana in the role, but when you're going to reboot, you know, whatever, I'm not as closely tied to this as other things. So.
Yeah, I don't think anybody blames Eric Bana for the first one.
No, and, you know, I thought Edward Norton was a good choice. Yeah. He's a bit of a power-hungry guy. He likes to keep charge of his own destiny in a film, which I respect.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks like they did good with that one. Mm-hmm. And it's one I did not get to see, and I kind of regret. It's one I missed at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm glad it did well.
Maybe had I seen it at the box office, it would have been in that top five. Guys like me went to see it, it would have been
gone further, yes. So, but somebody has brought up the question from the boards, talking a little bit about Heath Ledger. We might as well bring it up again, because we talked about him fairly in depth on one of the previous podcasts. But now that we've seen the film, do you think it lives up to, you know, people are vaguely deifying him, doing the whole he's dead, he's James Dean sort of thing. But how do you think it stood up as a role? Do you honestly believe it's Oscar worthy?
Yes, I do. And I was worried about that at the beginning, too, because, you know, you get online, you see fan response, which is just so silly. Oh, man, people trying to put the most ridiculous spins on the Joker is the role that killed him, and oh my God.
People love that stuff,
don't
they?
Are you serious?
It's like the Poltergeist curse, you know, it's like, oh, we love that stuff, it's great.
Like, man, it destroys my faith in humanity, which is, you know, destroyed bit by bit every day anyway.
Every time I get on the internet.
Yeah, pretty much. But, You know, yeah, I thought I think he definitely deserves an Oscar nomination. Mm-hmm. We'll see who he's up against, but man, it's hard to argue with that performance. And I don't think anyone can really honestly deny that or take that away from him. Mm-hmm. You certainly had a lot of, there was a lot of thought about, you know, that sympathy, you know, vote and all that. It's bollocks.
Yeah, yeah. I think he would have gotten the same notice.
Watch the film.
Yeah, yeah.
Forget that he's, you know, the story behind that story. Right. Watch the performance. It's an Oscar-worthy performance. Now, the thing that bothers me is the people that are saying Aaron Eckhart deserves a nomination for his role. And while I think that Aaron Eckhart was very good,
I think he was overlooked, but I don't think he's an Oscar nomination.
The comment I made in my forum was, let's not go all Christy Brown on him yet. I mean, this is not Daniel Day-Lewis. This is not a part that right. deserves an Academy Award.
No, not really. No. I thought he was great. I thought he's gotten a little overlooked in all the press. It's all Christian Bale. It's all Heath Ledger. And I thought Aaron Eckhart did a great job. But I don't think it's Oscar.
I think Aaron Eckhart got a lot of love.
Yeah.
Actually, after the fact,
just
judging from what I'd seen.
Okay,
but I just cannot agree that it's a very good performance.
Yeah, yeah.
But Oscar. But I would, if I was the Academy, if I was the person handing out awards, I would not give him one for that performance. You know, that's. Send me the hate mail now.
The Aaron Eckhart fan club is already writing.
It's yeah. I mean, it's. Hey, I love Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah, yeah.
I always have.
It's not about that.
It has nothing to do with any kind of bias. Oh. It's just that it upsets me. It doesn't upset me, but it disturbs me when I read.
You're in
stuff.
The corner crying.
It's like, just because Batman was so popular, obviously it's made almost $500 million at the box office. Obviously, it's going to have its fans,
right.
And those fans are crying. Some of them. For Aaron Eckhart to get more attention, I think he got a lot of attention.
Well, yeah,
and I don't think he needs an Academy Award nomination.
I think it's bumped him up the list now. I'm sure more people are looking at him, and it's certainly going to help his career.
He's now going to be the Jeff Goldblum of blockbuster films for the next generation. Come on, he was in The Core. I mean, he's been around for a long time. It's he finally got cast in the right kind of thing, and he's always been good. He's always chosen fairly well.
Yeah.
And he landed in this spot. He's kind of perfect for Harvey Dent.
So I have to ask you the stupid rumor or the comment I keep reading about people is like a lot of people hate Batman's voice.
I despise it.
Did you despise it after a while? It started grating on me towards the end. I started to notice it by about the last couple of scenes. I was like, all right, I'm done with that.
Oddly enough, it didn't bother me so much in Batman Begins. And the reason for that, I think, is because, and maybe I just have to go back and look, but I didn't remember it being so pronounced.
Well, I also don't think Batman speaks as much in the first film. I think he's got a lot more dialogue in this one, especially towards the end, and I think you suddenly realize what he's doing.
But when the guy is speaking, it's like, I understand fully, and I completely agree with the fact that they have to distance Batman's vocal performance from Bruce Wayne's. Mm-hmm. I think it's just going a bit overboard. And I'm actually surprised that Christopher Nolan didn't go, you know what, let's tone that down a bit,
try
something different. You know, it's like, hey, Batman, how about you speak with a British accent?
Yeah.
That'll change. That'll make you. That'll separate. How about you're from Lithuania? Okay, anything but.
Batman will stop you. You must stop
the crazy
criminals.
Gravel is just it's overkill. And I love Chris Bale.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people. Christian Bale is easy. He's got a huge fan base these days.
Yeah.
So he's easy to hate too.
There's always that stupid backlash. You're like, come on, man, just leave him alone.
What's he done? You know, well, I say look at some of the 30 films, 30,
go,
40
go
films.
Go watch
he's
The
done.
Mechanic or, you know, something and see what kind of an actor
he's
the guy
not
is.
In The Mechanic?
Yes, he is.
That's Charles Bronson.
Well, you're going back now.
Machinist.
Oh, yeah, that's right, The Mechanic. I'm sorry. See, I'm trying to make a point for Christian Bale, and I'm screwing it up. But you're right. Great Charles Bronson.
I knew what
by
you were
way,
talking
so,
about,
yeah,
though.
Begins with an M.
But, yeah, I mean, I've been watching Christian Bale since he
Empire of the Sun.
First did a movie with Steven Spielberg, which he was incredible in.
Yeah,
And, you know, he's done some.
That's a whole other topic. Work. Actual child actors that turned into good actors, and he's definitely one of the top of the list, that's for sure. But
yeah, exactly. I love Rain of Fire. I don't care if people don't like that movie.
It was a fun. I liked the film. I wanted more dragons, but it was still a fun film.
If you didn't like it.
Yeah, it was just fun. So, all right, well, that
covers. And I'm really looking forward to Terminator Salvation.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that immediately went up a notch in my eyes when he signed on for it, because he's totally the kind of guy who's not going to sign on for something, I think, that's just a paycheck. I mean, I do think he kind of cares about what's going on. So the fact that he signed up for this kind of made me think, okay, well, it's got some merit. So.
Hey, before we get into 2009 summer
that's the next
blockbusters
step,
discussion,
yeah.
someone answer me a question.
Okay.
How in God's name did M. Night Shyamalan's movie The Happening make $64 million? How did that happen? I have to think the only way it could have happened is that I've said this before, I am a fan of M. Night Shyamalan's. I like every one of his movies with the exception of The Happening. Mm-hmm. I find something to like in them. Partly because he's the only guy that takes our genre seriously most of the time.
Yeah.
That has a, you know, a larger filmmaker credentials.
Right.
I don't think every one of them's a masterpiece, but I do enjoy them. The Happening,
Well, wow. You don't like spores killing everybody or something? Run away from the wind. Run!
It wasn't so much the concept. It was the execution.
Yeah.
And Mark Wahlberg as a science teacher was...
a little bit of a stretch.
I've never been a fan of Mark Wahlberg's. I respect the man
yeah.
as a person. But of his acting career, I've never been a fan. Yeah. And this movie put on display every bad... Every bad,
everything that could be bad was.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I love Zooey Deschanel.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't like her in this movie.
Oh, really?
It was bad on every level for me.
Well, and, there you go.
And that was it honestly shocked me because I am a fan and I have embraced movies people think are crap. I mean, yeah. I'm using a lighter word here. People think are shaving cream.
Be nice and clean.
Yeah, shave every day. So. But I'm still, I think that to answer my own question, I think that it made $64 million because enough people had enough faith to at least see what it was, even despite the bad reviews. Like, could it be that bad? It's still M. Night, and they went.
Shyamalan Ding Dong.
But I'm surprised that word of mouth didn't kill that film outright.
Well, you know, 64, I mean, it opened with 30 and ended with 64. That's
it
not that
opened
good.
Opened with 30.
Yeah, it opened with 30 wow. million, which is, well, that's really on his name alone. I mean,
yeah,
people do want
to
go see
totally.
That for him.
I think you got to throw Mark Wahlberg into that, too, because as much as I don't really respect him,
well, he does
a
have a big
actor,
fan base, yeah.
I think he's more of a performer.
Right.
And then he can be directed by someone like in The Departed. I thought he was, you know, he was fantastic.
He has the right role. He's
Boogie Nights. He's fantastic.
Exactly, Boogie Nights.
I even liked Shooter. Mm-hmm. And I'll give Mark Wahlberg that. I even like Shooter, but it's there's definitely, you know, you had some Mark Wahlberg fans going to see that, but
shocking
$64 million.
Well, let's put it this way: in a fit of karma, a movie that opened up and only played in 687 theaters beat it. Hannah Montana, the Best of Both Worlds concert tour, made more money than The Happening. So
how did just out of curiosity, how did a Hannah Montana project? Knowing the vast
fan base
for it,
crazed.
How does that only ever open in 64 theaters?
Well, it's in 687 because I think it was in all IMAX 3D.
It was only
in IMAX 3D, and it still ended up beating a movie that was in 3,000 theaters. So. And also, just above Hannah Montana is Tropic Thunder. It's still out there.
I highly
recommend Tropic Thunder. I saw a screening of it at Comic-Con.
I like a good movie that insults and has the balls enough to dare to be racial.
It was funny. And you never think about that
if
once.
If you just take it for where it's coming from, you know, you
well, because
you
they balance
not
it out.
Be offended
they,
by
they make it.
It
a point. I mean, the black actor guy keeps saying, you know, there was one part for a black actor.
What
in
do
this.
You mean?
That's right. And he said, there's one actor, one part for a black actor, and they gave it to Crocodile Dundee. And it's really funny. Their interaction, I love that film. It's one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time. Can't recommend it enough. So.
Yeah, I was going to go see that movie with Daly a couple weeks ago when it first opened, and we decided instead to stay in and work.
Sure.
But it's on
that's what
my,
the martini glasses are for.
No. So. You know, we don't drink when we work. We were just in the mode to work, and we put in some, we watched the Ipcrest file.
There you go.
Which was a Jim, I recruited a new fan. And I didn't have to say a word. I just stuck it in and let Jim absorb it. And he went, oh my God, how good is this movie? And I went, yep.
You got it, buddy. All right. Well, turning from 2008, where we have completely slaughtered the box office, obviously our destinies as prognosticators may not be that great. But
I
still
have to say this before we I'm sorry, I don't mean to
move back to 2008.
But 2008, I just looked down this list, and out of the top 25 films, remember I said I saw four in the top five?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen five in the top 25.
Ooh, what else did you see? Well, you saw Hellboy, probably.
No, I did not see Hellboy.
Oh my God, you should
did not get a chance to see Hellboy. I saw Cloverfield.
Ah, Cloverfield is number 22. Yeah.
So
behind Jumper, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't know how Jumper made so much money. I thought it came and went so fast that you know, hell, it was out on DVD so fast. Yeah. I was like, what the heck?
Cloverfield's another one. It opened up with $40 million, but only made 80. So that's a big drop off over the next few weeks. Word of mouth apparently wasn't very good on that, but I mean, it was great to get you into the theater. But
I'm curious to know how long it played in theaters. I mean, I think once you're played out and you stop making chunk of money,
because
usually a film will you know, sometimes there's exceptions to the rule. You know, you look at Casino Royale, it made I think $40 million its opening weekend. It made 58 its second, or 56 or 55.
Right, because people went, hey, this guy's good.
Yeah, and so there was that, but normally you get that drop off, that market drop off. Maybe you make three quarters to a half in week two.
Right. Yeah, it's usually a 50%
drop. And that drops exponentially. Boom, boom, boom,
boom. Yeah. They've got their little charts.
And by the time you're making $2 million a week, it kind of becomes, you know, when you have those prints out and, it becomes kind of pointless to keep it around. It's becoming more of a fashion, more of the status quo to pull your film and get it slated into DVD as quickly as possible, recouping even more money, and also, you know, then your box office release is actually promoting your DVD release in a way.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, because we're talking about 2-3 month windows.
Yeah.
So before the heat dies down, they want it out. You know, makes sense.
You know, I'd throw in a quick business thing and get your opinion on this, but I know that they want to get to the point where they deliver movies digitally. You know, they can just bypass film altogether. That's a huge cost savings for the studios, because by the time you make 3,000 work prints off of your average film, it's like $50, $60, $80, $100 million added onto your budget. So if you just do this digitally, that's all profit now. I mean, that'll really help the studios.
It's like record companies and not having to print, you know, jewel cases and stuff like that. But you know, it's a bigger question than just that. They have to convert the theaters.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, eventually. I mean, I'm thinking 5-10 years down the line.
Spielberg talked about this 5-7 years ago.
Yeah.
Where
it's got to freak out Kodak or whoever's making the films.
it's gonna impact, definitely. Yeah. You know, and it's not gonna be an overnight thing by any stretch of the imagination. But you know, it again takes us away from the question of film.
Mm-hmm.
It takes us away from how film looks. You know, this is the same question of how vinyl sounds versus a CD. We're gonna experience some of that whole transition, and you know, it's digital editing versus you know, Avid or I'm sorry, whatever the old
film reel to reel.
Yeah. There's always a question about how it affects the quality, the look of a film, and with every new year, they find another way digitally to make it look or feel like the old thing. The honest to God situation is, it'll never be the same.
Right, right.
It never will be. You can try to make it look as much as you can try to dress it up like a duck, but it still ain't a duck. Soon, you know, sometime in the next 25 years,
mm-hmm.
we're never gonna know. I mean, I know 20-year-old kids that don't know what a rotary phone is. What is that? It's just a telephone. It's got a cord on it. It's got, what are the numbers? There's no buttons. You turn it like this. It's we all evolve.
Yeah, we hope we do at least. So
I'm going to go kicking and screaming. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, I know that I was just going to quickly, you said something about editing. I've done a lot of Final Cut Pro digital editing, and there was a great book by Walter Murch called In the Blink of an Eye.
How about The Book?
The Book, yeah.
On the subject.
One of the most interesting things about it, he's totally embraced the whole digital thing, but one of the things that he thought was really...
There's a lot to embrace, too.
Oh, yeah,
I don't
great.
Want to say that it's a bag of bull.
But one of the biggest things that he talked about, and I totally agree with him, is that in the old days, when you were going really fast through a film to get to the next scene, you knew what you wanted to go over, and it was way down a thing. So he's zipping through. You still saw all the movement. You still saw.
Sure.
It was just really sped up. And every now and then, he would stop and go, "Oh, there, that's how I need that." You know, and he would see it. With digital, if you're scrolling fast, if you're scrubbing, it's like once every 25 frames or something. So you're missing all of those little things. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how that's really huge. In his, back in the old days, he could totally watch a film backwards and forward and see every movement. And now it's like, pick, pick, pluck, 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 and you lose a lot of that stuff. You may have missed a glance from an actor or something like that. See, and that's
too,
the part he doesn't
like. It's
too
bad LaserDisc didn't get better, because you remember those CAV format LaserDiscs were perfect for that.
Exactly. Go through the whole thing.
Yeah, so you could step through it. It was incredible. Yeah. Lost technology. 2009 box office. What do you think's going to play?
2009 box office. Well, I think the first thing to do is to run down very quickly. We have a few minutes left here to talk about. We have coming out in 2009, Terminator Salvation, X-Men Begins thing with Wolverine. He gets his own movie.
It's X-Men Origins.
Yeah. Origins, sorry, yes. He gets his own movie. How fun is that? Monsters versus Aliens is coming out. That's a 3D movie, I believe.
What's Monsters versus Aliens?
I think it's coming out at the same time as Avatar is. I believe it's a 3D.
Oh, yeah, let's not forget Avatar.
Avatar is coming out May 22nd. Transformers G.I. Joe. Narnia 3, possibly. That may get put on hold. Prince of Persia.
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter is coming out. That's been moved, yeah. So, Pixar's next movie called Up, which I think is another interesting choice. Ice Age 3, my point being, again, that they're just continuing to make the same crappy movie.
Kids love that movie, Tom. They love Manny.
Russell Crowe movie called Nottingham, which I'm very excited about, actually. At least the concept is pretty cool.
I'm stoked to see Nottingham.
The possibility of The Watchmen coming out, assuming Fox doesn't block its outcome. I think it's Fox that's suing whoever. But somebody's suing somebody to stop the block. We'll talk about that in a second. And even though it's coming out the end of this year, I still will put it in there as the new 007 Quantum of Solace movie comes out at the end of this year. I think it's December. But,
it starts November 14th.
Yeah, so yeah, but it's still...
moved. It was supposed to open the 7th and it got moved back.
It's pretty much the only big thing coming out this fall. So coming next summer, what
also,
do you...
also The Spirit.
Oh, that's right. The Spirit is coming out. That's right.
Which I am not excited about.
It's one of the reasons. I know they moved Harry Potter. I think they were just a little afraid of some of the fall movies or something.
Punisher Warzone opens December 5th. I wouldn't say that's a huge release. I mean, it's huge for comic fans, for Punisher fans, but as for the general public, Australia, too, opens in November.
Ah, that's right.
And the new Cormac McCarthy adaptation,
all the Oscar films.
The Road, opens in November as well.
Those are all the big Oscar films that are coming out. But in terms of the summer of 2009, what about that list do you think is going
to... Oscar caliber, but I don't know.
Caliber, yes. It's always a fun thing to say. Oscar
2009, what are you looking forward to?
What am I looking forward to? Well, you know, I'm a huge Hugh Jackman fan, and I think, you know, I'd be in line to go see Wolverine. I know zero about it.
You haven't seen the trailer?
I saw a little bit of the, yes, I did see the trailer with Liev Schreiber.
Trailer looks pretty cool.
That was pretty cool, and I love the fact I have to fall desperately in love. My wife would leave me for Hugh Jackman, but you know what? I'd probably have a beer with him, too, because he just looks like the greatest guy, and he showed up at Comic-Con sort of unannounced.
And I'd say have fun paying her bills. Thanks for freeing
exactly.
me.
Exactly.
See
you.
Ya. Nice to have a drink. Cheers, Hugh. Cheers, man.
And you've got good beer down in Australia, so... So X-Men Wolverine, I'm probably looking forward to. I'm looking forward to Avatar just because it's got this long, ridiculous history, and it's James Ego, the size of California, Cameron, saying it's going to be the next generation of everything. So I'd be interested to see if it really lives up to any of that hype. Pixar's.
I got no problem with a guy with an ego that big, as long as he's deserved it.
If he deserves it.
I have to say that Cameron has deserved it.
Yeah, so. You can certainly make a case for. Yeah, he's definitely. I'll watch anything he does. Pixar's Up, I would definitely go see, and I think The Watchmen, if it comes out, it certainly looks like it's going down the right road. I think that I'm worried more about the screenplay. I mean, for me, people always say that to me now. They say, wow, that movie looks good, and I keep my counterpoint to that is, like, all movies can look good now. It's not that hard anymore. You know, back in the 70s and 80s, even the 90s, special effects movies were hard to make look good because it was still practical stuff. Now it's like, you know what, you know, a bunch of guys in their computers can make a movie look good, but it's like Fantastic Four. Sure, that looked good, but, you know, is the story going to catch up?
I thought it looked like shit.
But is the adaptation of The Watchmen actually going to live up to The Watchmen itself? I don't know, but I'll definitely go and see that. I think that, I don't know, of those, maybe Terminator might be the top one. Transformers 2 is coming out, but I could care less. You know, big robot movie.
I didn't
Michael
see
Bay.
Transformers, so I don't think I'm going to rush to go see Transformers 2.
One. What do you
it
think?
It looks cool. I mean, I like the robots and the way the effects are incredible. I mean, there's no disputing that. But
no,
it just,
and it's
other than that, it holds no. I mean, I wasn't a Transformers fan when I was a kid. So.
No, it just, you know what? It was funny to talk to people about that. It was like right after us in our, you know, the time period where you grew up and we have our cool little cartoons and everything. Transformers happened just about 2-3 years after you and I were past that level.
Yeah, and you know,
because everybody who's about 35, 38 was like, oh my God, Transformers!
And I was too late for. or too early for the G.I. Joe little 4-inch action figures and the TV show, the cartoon. So I'm not really a G.I. Joe
Cobra Commander.
I think a lot of stuff's pretty cool. But
So what do you think is going to come down and what's going to be the best?
Oh, who's to say what's going to be the best? Good God.
What are you looking forward to?
I am looking forward to Wolverine because I've been a Wolverine fan, X-Men fan, since I was 10 years old, which, as some of you know, was, I don't know, a millennium ago.
1,000 years ago.
and obviously, you know, I love Hugh Jackman in the role. The trailer I thought was brilliant. I think they're being smart about this. Hugh is producing, so you know he's bringing some of his vision and some of his ideas to this thing. And I think
Liev Schreiber, what a great choice.
I think he's a great choice. I wasn't completely sold on him at first because I like Liev. Let's not misunderstand me, but I was a little curious about Sabretooth. But once I saw the makeup and once I saw him in the movie, I thought, I'm getting a little sick of forget I was good. But Liev looks great. Danny Houston is hell. I go to see movies. This is how bent I am about my films. I go to see a movie if Danny Houston's in it. That'll get me to a movie. So that should tell you something about me. But is that I'm gay for Danny Houston, apparently.
Okay, you got a man crush going on there.
God, no, I just think he's a brilliant performer. You know, much the same with Ralph Fiennes. I like to see about anything he does.
Right.
You know, I enjoy watching great actors do their thing in a good vehicle, in a good project. And it's
directed by a guy I've never heard of, Gavin Hood, which he hasn't directed a lot. He's actually sort of an actor. He's been in movies like, you know, Delta Force 2 and Kickboxer 5. Well, how did he get this gig?
Let's hope that this doesn't turn into a Kevin Costner, Kevin Reynolds relationship.
Really?
Is he
a friend of Hughes?
I would have to say they have to have some. I mean, doesn't that make sense? He's a producer. I mean, he's going to have liked this guy for some reason and know that he's capable, based on his track record, that he can pull off a film like this. So. And I think that also when you're a producer and you have the clout that a Hugh Jackman has these days, it's not unlike a Clint Eastwood clout when he's, or a Mel Gibson clout when they're working with another director and yet they're still kind of, you know, behind the scenes calling shots, or whether that's, you know, in conjunction with the director or after the fact. Look at Mel Gibson with, Payback, you know, with the Brian Helgeland, Mel went in and directed a bunch. Look at Clint Eastwood with Outlaw Josie Wales, where Philip Kaufman gets fired and replaced and whatever. I mean, I'm going off on a tangent, but
we can do that.
I think Hugh probably had a lot to say. So I think I don't think the question of director there is going to be a huge issue.
Yeah,
especially based on what we've seen. So after that, I'm really looking forward to Terminator Salvation, and you know, a lot of people are concerned. obviously Christian Bale's in it. There's a trailer or a teaser out right now that looks pretty good. But the biggest question is Mick G is directing it. This is the man who brought us Charlie's Angels. But I saw a little film he did year before, called We Are Marshall, and didn't know he directed the film until I got done watching it, and I thought, wow, that was a really mature film.
Right. So it is possible.
Yeah. And so I wasn't ready to, send McGee to the gallows just because he was directing this film, because I was rather impressed with his last effort. So, you know, I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, and so far I haven't been disappointed. And I think it's good for people to keep an open mind on this one. It's the subject matter, the material. I don't think it's going to get misused.
Yeah,
I think it's in very capable hands.
That's all we can ask.
And
really,
you couldn't have asked for a better leading man for John Connor in a major motion picture stage in that franchise.
That knocked it up a notch for me. I was like, oh, really? Christian Bale? Wow, okay, cool.
I mean, when you bring on a guy like with Christian Bale's track record to this project, it's hell. I mean, Christian is at a point now in his career where he can attract Schwarzenegger, almost Schwarzenegger-type fan base.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to Harry Potter 2. I don't mean
Harry Potter also.
I don't mean the Chamber of Secrets. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the Harry Potter. I'm a fan of that bunch. I'm also looking forward to Angels and Demons. As much as many people who I respect and love didn't like the Da Vinci Code, I did enjoy it.
It was good.
I had never read the book before I saw the film.
That helps.
I loved the cast. I thought, you know, I had a fun time with it.
I'd watch Audrey Tautou read the phone book in French.
Love the music.
Yeah. Oh, the music's great. Yeah.
You know, and I've given Hans Zimmer a lot of crap over the years, but the last couple of years he's delivered some really wonderful scores.
He obviously took your words to heart.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure I had a major impact on how Hans turned his career around in my eyes. But I don't have all the. I guess I'm looking forward to Avatar. I don't really know a lot about.
I know nothing about it other than, like I said, I'm interested in it just from the fact that it's been going on for so long, and it's like all this new cutting edge technology, and it's James Cameron hasn't done anything in 10 years, kind of thing, or whatever. You know, so I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds.
I'm looking forward to filming The Devil's Commandos in 2000.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Out there.
So the Satan without his underwear.
Oh, that's I wanted to talk about In Bruges.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, let's
move it to next episode.
Yeah, we'll talk about In Bruges next episode, because we are running out of time here, and so this is just the beginning of season two of Depth of Field.
Yeah, sorry there was so much ramble, and this is this kind of first episode trying to get back on our feet here. We haven't done this in a while.
Well, we're going to try to get Tim off to buy his actual podcast microphone, so maybe if we can broadcast from our own...
Will you push me in the cart, Tom?
If we can actually get him to have his own stuff, we might be able to do this. You know, we don't have to get together, because it is a little bit of a pain every now and then with our families and all, so we are hopefully going to be doing more and more of these soon. So, thanks for listening to Depth of Field, Season 2, Episode 1.
Were we not recording?
Dum dum. We are now.
Dum dum. Cool. Edit that part out.
Dum dum. I'm doing the music from The Thing. Dum dum.
Oh, The Thing.
Give me the year.
One of my favorite movies of all time. 81?
Close.
82. Yeah, 82. Yeah. I always want to think it's 81 for some reason.
Obviously directed by Alfred Hitchcock. We all know that.
Genius. Howard Hawks, actually, directed.
That's right. It was his last film.
81 version. It's 82 version of The Thing.
All right, I'll give you Kurt Russell, but I need at least five or six other people in the film.
Five or six, okay. Yeah,
there aren't that many, so, you know.
I will first go obscure and say Charles Hallahan.
He's
the guy that his head turns into the spider.
Oh, cool.
Has the heart condition. Nice. And then I'm going to go to Donald Moffat, who plays Gary.
Yes, Gary. With two R's.
His little pop gun. Then I'm going to go, I can't say Kurt Russell, so I'm going to go Keith David.
That's right.
I love Keith David in that movie. T.K. Carter plays Knowles, the roller skating kitchen dude. Get your dirty drawers. I love that guy. Loved him in Seems Like Old Times with Chevy and Goldie.
Well, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, Chester. Carter. Played Chester in that movie. Let's see. Richard Mazur, who I love.
Great. Oh, he's always great.
Wonderful actor. Yeah. Love him in Hanover Street. Love him in a lot of things. Loved him in One Day at a Time, I think he played. No. Okay. How many am I on?
I believe that was...
Richard Dysart.
Five. Okay, you've hit six now.
Wilford Brimley.
Wilford Brimley, getting his diabetic stuff as an alien.
Just trust in the Lord. I see things out here, Mac.
You have any idea? You
know, I'll kill you!
You know who did...
I forget who plays Windows, and I forget who plays Palmer. I don't know that guy's name either, and I can't think of the guy who plays Bennings. But I think those are the only three guys I didn't remember.
But you know their character's name, so I got to give you bonus points for that one.
There you freaking go, babe.
That's right. Windows was played by Thomas G. Waits.
Oh, yeah, right. Tom Waits, the other Tom Waits. That's right.
Bennings, George Bennings, you said, was played by Peter Maloney.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in anything since.
And who was the other one? Palmer, you said. David Clemen.
Yeah, that guy's great in that movie. Mm.
Do you know that the computer voice is an uncredited Adrienne Barbeau?
Wow. Yeah, they must have been still dating
at that time. Who married at that time.
Yeah. Well, I think they got divorced around the same time, too. We could check this. But music by Ennio Morricone.
Yeah.
Which obviously sounds very Carpenter-like.
One of the first soundtracks I ran out and bought after the film. I just loved it so much. I just got the LP. I think I still have the LP of it.
Yeah, Despair is my favorite cue, my favorite track on that. But You know, Ennio did not have a good time working on the thing.
Adrian Barbeau, they divorced in 1984, right after this.
There you go, not too long after. Yeah, sorry. Dean Cundey was, I think, the director of photography.
Okay, now you're just out of control.
He is also in the movie. Dean stars Cundey. As one of the guys speaking Norwegian and shooting the... he's the guy trying to shoot the wolf at the beginning.
Oh, yeah?
See if he's credited. I just want to see if I'm...
Well, as they have Norbert Weiser as Norwegian, right. Larry J. Franco as Norwegian passenger with rifle.
His co-producer, Larry J. Franco.
That is. He's one of the co-producers. Associate producer, yeah.
But Dean Cundey, what a fantastic job of cinematography on that film.
That film is beautiful.
It's just beautiful. And for those of you that have never watched the special features, man, it's really, I hope you get a chance to watch the how they did the light bursting through the thing graphic at the beginning of the movie. It's really interesting.
Oh, cool. That stuff. You know, the film was originally banned when released in Finland.
No idea why. I'm shocked and stunned.
Donald Pleasance was supposed to play the character of Blair.
Wow, I never knew that.
He was unable to perform the role due to a scheduling conflict.
That's actually good. Because I think Wilford Brimley, I don't see anybody else there anymore. Although, what a different film that would be with Donald Pleasance. That's cool, I never knew that.
Also, at the beginning of the film, the Norwegian with the rifle is the second unit director and associate producer, Larry J. Franco. Who is also Kurt Russell's then brother-in-law.
Ah.
I didn't know that.
About that. So I wonder if that was brother-in-law. God, who's Kurt Russell's sister or brother? I didn't know he had a sister.
I don't know.
Was he married to Susan Hubley at the time?
Oh, jeez. Now you're pulling stuff out of your butt here.
He was married to Susan Hubley, who played the girl in Chock Full of Nuts in Escape from New York.
He was married to Jill Russell.
Also played... So he was married to his sister.
He's the father of Atlanta Braves baseball player Matt Franco.
How about that?
How cool is that? I know Kurt was a big baseball player.
I love this stuff.
Isn't that great? I love that stuff. Yeah, Kurt Russell was he almost played pro ball, I think. I believe he was second baseman or something like that. He was very close to playing pro ball.
He was minor league, very, very highly recruited. Yeah, he was a hell of a baseball player. Yeah.
See, these are the things we know.
But Disney beckoned, and he went and did movies, and he finally parlayed that into a real career beyond Disney. I don't say a real.
This could be a spinoff show. We talked about that earlier with Christian Bale. Kurt Russell is definitely one of those child actors who moved on and did very well, as opposed to getting lost in the mix. He's got to be one of the top.
Kurt
five.
Really did it right.
Yeah,
you know,
he disappeared for a little while.
He never became John Wayne, although he did for a brief moment in Big Trouble in Little China.
I love that.
But he never became a huge, huge star. But boy, he did it. He's got a nice little body of work behind him. I really love a movie called Winter People. Which nobody's seen, but Kurt's great.
Except for you.
And no, a lot of people. Kelly McGillis is in it. This is after Witness, so it she was still kind of hot at that point.
Yeah, she was hot.
I mean, hot as a actress.
I was going to say, let's not get slapping.
I was never that drawn to Kelly McGillis as a sex symbol, although I think in Top Gun I thought she was pretty hot.
She was the one I always quote as a... when people say gratuitous nudity in films, but one of the best uses of nudity in films was in Witness.
Yeah, Witness.
Where she's sponging herself off from the top down. It's perfect because you're not looking at her sexually. You're looking at, oh my God, it's a Quaker woman and she's topless and it's this great moment.
No, I was looking at her sexually.
Well, there's that too later. Yeah.
I thought it was very tastefully done.
It was because then he's on the outside looking through the screen door and it's a perfect moment because it's like, oh my God.
And he feels guilty.
Yeah, and then she just stands there thinking, oh, go take me. And
he feels that giant log hard on his pants. He feels very guilty for that.
Yeah, I'm trying to make a point. You're talking about logs and
pants. I'm sorry. Thank God we were at home, you know, behind, in the darkness of our own TV.
You know that this is the first of John Carpenter's films, which he did not score himself, by the way. So. That's what it says.
Oh, it's a good place to end. I think so, yeah. That was a good little,
I can end it right there.
Let it go right there. It's awesome.